Today is Mother's birthday. Why do we celebrate Mother's birthday? We know that Mother has told us that birthday is a very special day for every soul. It's a day in which the soul can be reborn. What about Lakshmi, can you mute all the other centers? Mother says that we can make the entire progress of a lifetime every year. A soul comes and takes birth in order to make a progress. What our soul came to progress in a lifetime, we can progress every year. And the birthday is the time when the soul is most receptive to make the greatest progress. What about Mother's birthday? 1 year on her birthday, Mother said, "Today is everyone's birthday." Her birthday is the birthday of all souls. For devotees, the grace of her birthday creates the opportunity to fulfill the highest aspirations of our souls during this lifetime. On February 21st, 1958, Mother spoke about the cosmic significance of her birthday. She said, "To celebrate the birth of a transitory body can satisfy some faithful feelings, those who want to worship her as a physical individual. To celebrate the manifestation of the eternal consciousness, the Divine Mother, can be done at every moment in universal history. Not just today, but to celebrate the advent of a new world, the supramental world, is a marvelous and exceptional privilege." That is what she has come for, and that is what she wants us to celebrate. The fulfillment, not of any personal aspiration of hers, not of a worship of the Divine Mother principle, the fulfillment of her work in coming to earth, which is the birth of a supramental world. Her birthday represents that. For earth, Mother's birthday is an opportunity for all of us. It's an opportunity to make a progress in a century, of a century in a single year. Sri Aurobindo and Mother came to Earth together at the same time, most significant, to do a work. He told us that Mother's consciousness and his consciousness are one. They are two aspects of the same reality. He is the Lord, the Ishwara. His personality radiates silence. The grace of Mother's birthday has just come to all of us. Appa has given a grace flower. He's the Lord, the Ishwara. His personality radiates silence and peace that transcend all manifestation. She's the Divine Shakti. She has many personalities representing the powers of the divine: knowledge, will, delight, love, perfection. They came together to earth to do a work. The work they came for is to transform life on earth to life divine. In his words, to bring down God to the world on earth. We came to change the earthly life for life divine. Their lives and work are the actual translation of this message into action. What Mother called Sri Aurobindo's action. Sri Aurobindo's action of bringing the supermental down to earth. Mother did not believe in words. She believed in acts. She didn't want us to get together to talk. She wanted us to come together to act, to change ourselves so that the world can change. Astrology has an amazing power of prediction, which is the ultimate faith for many in Indian traditions. When Rajaji, C. Rajaji Gopalacharya, was born, which must have been about the time before Mother was born, when he was born, it seems an astrologer was consulted. And the astrologer said, this man, this boy will grow up to be the Viceroy of India. Now you can imagine in 140 years ago, the idea of any Indian becoming viceroy, clearly they would have had a good laugh at the astrologer. Viceroy means vice king. He's the first deputy to the King of England. There was no question at that time of an Indian even becoming a collector, let alone a viceroy. But actually, in 1948, after India became independent, there was no longer the viceroy, but before the first president, they converted the post of Governor General of India, which was the viceroy's post, and Rajaji indeed became the first Governor General of India. It's an amazing power of prediction. Life Divine has an even more remarkable power of prediction. Appa has called Life Divine the horoscope of the universe, of the whole universe, not of a person, not of a country, not even of just humanity. Life Divine is the horoscope of the whole universe. And in that horoscope, Sri Aurobindo says that the divine life is inevitable. He predicts it with the accuracy of an astrologer. How remarkable this is, it's like imagine 1 million or 3 million years ago going to an ape in the forest and telling the ape that one day he or his descendants will be reading books, living in houses, driving cars, sailing on the oceans, flying in the heavens, typing on computers, and speaking over the internet. Of course, the ape wouldn't have known at all what we're talking about, but it looks preposterous. That's the significance when Sri Aurobindo wrote Life Divine. To say that life can become divine sounds equally unimaginable. Because what we know at least, what humanity knows of life up until now, has been anything but divine. Mother says of Sri Aurobindo's message, Sri Aurobindo's message is in immortal sunlight radiating over the future. She said this on his birthday, on his centenary birthday in 1972. That's the message of Life Divine. Our future of humanity, the future of life, is an immortal sunlight, an everlasting sunlight, a sun that never sets. That's the power of prediction. Well, what's the difference between the power of prediction of the astrologer and of that of Sri Aurobindo? Astrology is based on the action of nature. Nature builds very slowly. She's never in a hurry. She works in the plane of time. She follows the law of karma. Mother's consciousness is the action of Shakti. She acts by the law of grace. Nature is the divine mother in disguise. Mother, who we call mother, is supernature, supermental nature, supermental Shakti. She wants to realize everything now, this minute, without waiting. Mother works in the plane of simultaneous, instantaneous time. Lakshmi, can you move the mic, please? In Life Divine, Sri Aurobindo tells us of spiritual evolution. The tradition tells us that the spirit is static, immutable being. It never changes. It has everything, is everything. The world is ever-changing becoming. So the spirit is the being. The world is the changing becoming, and our goal is to move from the world to the spirit. But Sri Aurobindo tells us that the spirit itself is evolving. Purusha, the witness, the Lord who is sitting up above as a witness, a silent detached witness, is evolving into the Ishwara, the creator, the supermental being who will make life divine. The spirit property, a mechanical force of nature, is evolving into Shakti, conscious force, mother's force. That is the significance of the descent of Mother and Sri Aurobindo. That is the significance of what we call mother's force. When Prakriti becomes Shakti, nature becomes supermental nature. Sri Aurobindo came to tell us that this is the hour of God. What is the hour of God? It's the birthday for the universe. As our birthday is the day in which we can make the progress of a year or a lifetime, the hour of God is the moment in which the universe as a whole can make the progress of centuries or millennium. Sri Aurobindo and Mother brought the hour of God. They came and created it. They made this our birthday for the entire universe. They told us that what can normally happen in long periods can be happened now by the law and action of grace. That's what they meant by the supermental manifestation. And what is it that should happen? Sri Aurobindo tells us, human life, earthly life, to become life divine. On April 24th, 1956. I'm still getting feedback, Lakshmi, are you moving? Thank you. On April 24th, 1956, Mother said, "The manifestation of the supermental upon earth is no more a promise, but a living reality. A living fact, a reality." Because on February 29th, 1956, the supermental force descended on earth. So Sri Aurobindo's prediction has already come true. It's not a prophecy of the distant future. He wrote Finished Life Divine in 1918, and by 1956, what he said was going to happen had already happened. The first significant, impossible, important, inevitable step from a human life to a life divine. And many steps have happened since then. And the supermental Shakti has been working since then to accelerate our progress. That's the hour of God for the universe, for Earth. What about for devotees? This is also an hour of God for us. Mother's birthday is an hour of God for those who love her and have faith in her. Her grace makes it possible for devotees to achieve now, at least in this coming year, all that we aspire for to achieve in a lifetime. Appa speaks of earth, of yogic life. He offers every devotee the human equivalent of the ultimate supermental realization. And the process that he describes is the same process that Sri Aurobindo writes about in Life Divine. The process of creation. Yogic life raises the life of the devotee to the highest level that we aspire for. Aspiration is the key to our achievement. Sri Aurobindo writes in the Mother, there are two powers that alone can affect, in their conjunction, in their combination, the great and difficult thing that is the aim of our endeavor. A fixed and unfailing aspiration that calls from below, and a supreme grace from above that answers. Sri Aurobindo and Mother have come. The grace has already answered. The supermental force has already descended. This is Mother's birthday. There cannot be a moment of grace, a more powerful hour of God, than this moment today in our lives. It is our aspiration that will determine our receptivity to receive Mother's consciousness as grace, to fulfill and act in our lives on this day and in the year to come. Aspiration is so important. That's why he starts Life Divine, the very first chapter, the human aspiration, because all accomplishment depends on aspiration. He tells us that the earliest formula of wisdom, man's earliest aspiration, promises to be the ultimate formula. There can be nothing greater than that or truer than that. God, light, freedom, immortality. This is what he means by a divine life, that we should be able to achieve and realize God and knowledge and truth and freedom and immortality here on earth. In a body, an unmixed bliss, perfection, honor in the body. And it is this aspiration that he assures us, that he predicts, will be fulfilled in a life divine. And it is this that Mother has told us in 56, the first essential step has already taken place for this to happen. For it to be complete, for life to be completely divine, the supermental transformation must complete itself. For us as devotees, we must convert our ordinary life, our social life, our human life, into yogic life, into mother's life. Aspiration is the key. What is it that you aspire for? She tells us, aspire for the highest, because that's what sets the limit on your accomplishment. The greater your aspiration, the greater your accomplishment. What do you aspire for? For career achievement? For prosperity? For happiness for your family? Friends? Jane Bennett aspired for a happy marriage. She was 23. She had only 50 pounds of dowry. But what she really aspired for was to marry a good man. And she found Bingley. Elizabeth Bennett said, I'm not satisfied with money or status or security or just a husband. I want somebody I can love and respect, admire. She aspired to marry a man of genuine truth and goodness. And she got a genuinely good man who loves her deeply. And along with that, just as one of the wedding gifts, she got Pemberley. What do you aspire for? Mother tells us it's best not to aspire for things or for even achievements. Aspire for excellent human qualities, not social status. Aspire for highest values, not things. Aspire to be a better person. If you want happiness, aspire that everyone around you should be happy and try to make them happy. If you want a good man or a good wife, aspire to be goodness personified like Jane. Aspire for mother, and nothing else is necessary because all else will come to you. Aspire to walk on mother's sunlit path with her at your side, the way mother used to walk with Krishna by her side on the veranda every night and putting her head on his shoulder. Have mother next to you, walk on her sunlit path with her next to you, and her grace will fulfill your highest aspirations, provided you're willing to meet her conditions. Do you face contradictions in your life, obstacles to your goals? In chapter 1, Sri Aurobindo tells us that your difficulties are really opportunities. They provide the essential conditions needed for your progress. Don't run away from difficulties. Don't run away from challenges. Don't run away from the contradictions. The greater the contradictions to your goal, the greater the sanction for your achievement, the higher you will rise. He tells us contradictions are compliments. Contradictions are nature's profoundest method. Nature is Prakriti. Nature is not in any hurry, but mother is. Call mother to replace Prakriti with Shakti. Ask nature to reveal herself as the Shakti, which she really is. And mother will convert a lifetime of difficulties into opportunities for immediate progress and instantaneous achievement now. You only need to call, and call intensely. There's no better time to do it than her birthday, to make that progress. Sri Aurobindo tells us in chapter 1 that all problems are essentially problems of harmony. Which means whatever our problem is, the solution is to establish harmony. The Buddha Mumbling Center has been talking in the meetings of Pride and Prejudice about how she overcame her very irresistible tendency to quarrel with her daughter-in-law, and visiting Sri Lanka, she was told that the war has ended the day she arrived. Previously, when she comes to Sri Lanka, every time she comes, there's an outbreak of war. And when she overcame that quarrel herself, the war in Sri Lanka ended. That's the power of harmony. It's the power not only to end quarrels, it's the power to attract infinite prosperity. It's the power to open the doors and windows of our house and our hearts for mother's happiness, mother's joy, mother's light. Harmony is not a question of what we do or what we say outside, but what we feel inside. It's not a question of behavior. It's a question of genuinely what we are and what we feel. Ask mother for harmony inside and your whole life will blossom. And the key to harmony, as we're going to discuss, as he tells us in the early chapters of Life Divine, the key to harmony is we have to move away from the ego. The ego's the source of our problems. We need a change of view. Nature presents us with contradiction, with obstacles, with opposition. We try to get rid of the obstacles, defeat the opposition, run away from the contradictions, or overcome them. Mother says, change your view. If you change your view inside, the contradictions become complements, the problems become opportunities. And he tells us how to do this in Life Divine, very practically. It's a handbook, it's a practical guide. We say aspiration's important. Then why aren't all our aspirations always fulfilled immediately? If grace is there, why aren't they fulfilled? Well, there are a number of conditions, and there are many reasons. One of the reasons that we've frequently spoken about and has been discussed in many of the Pride and Prejudice meeting calls is expectation. We confuse our aspiration with our expectation. Aspiration is ardently willing for something. Expectation is wishfully waiting for it to happen. It's very clear in Pride and Prejudice. Jane refuses to think about what's going to happen to her. She refuses to expect anything. She refuses to even allow herself to say that she loves Bingley or to think that she loves Bingley because it's improper for her to love a man who hasn't proposed to her. That's how she feels. And what happens when she's sitting there refusing to expect Bingley is falling deeply in love with her, coming after her, choosing her, dancing with her, and coming to the point of proposing to her? And then what happened at the Netherfield Ball? Mrs. Bennett almost announces to everybody that they're engaged, and probably Jane also felt at this point that he's going to propose at any moment. What happened? The very next minute, he ran away. The whole thing disappeared. And she was forced to overcome that expectation and that disappointment. She could never forget him because she found him the most amiable man she ever knew. But she gave up expecting anything. It doesn't mean she stopped aspiring for him. And then just as suddenly, 7 or 8 months later, he appears at the door, and with a day or two, before she can expect anything, he proposes. When Darcy proposed to Elizabeth at Hunsford, he expected her to accept. He was sure she would accept. Any woman in her right mind would accept, as Collins expected her to accept. Well, we know how their expectation turned out. They both were sorely disappointed. Darcy didn't stop aspiring for her, he didn't stop loving her, but he certainly stopped expecting anything. After all, after a woman tells you you're the last man on earth I would marry, it would be very foolish for a man to expect it. He certainly did not expect her to show up at Pemberley one day at his very doorstep when he arrived back there. But she did. She fulfilled his aspiration when he had no expectation. And he was encouraged, no doubt, and probably the expectation came back after he called on her at the inn with Georgiana and she came with the gardeners to Pemberley. So the next morning he goes to the inn to meet her, perhaps this time expecting she'll say yes to his proposal. And what happens? Lizzie has the letter from Jane, Lydia has a loaf from Wickham, and the whole thing is spoiled. And as he walks out the door, Elizabeth says, well, I will never see him again. She's sure. Her expectation is completely over. Now she loves him, now she wants him, but she's very sure she'll never see him again. And 1 month later, he comes back, and they marry. So the difference between aspiration and expectation is not just a word. It's a very important attitude. Aspiration also requires patience. Excitement, anticipation are signs that we are expecting, not aspiring. Schrodinger says in Synthesis that we must aspire so intensely that as if the result must come the very next moment, that we must have the infinite patience to wait for eternity. Appa says, that which has an end is not patience. And I can personally testify to the fact that Appa's patience has no end, and it's that endless patience that is infinitely fulfilled in life. She tells us that our achievement is inevitable. Sri Aurobindo tells us that our highest aspirations of earth, of humanity, will inevitably fulfill because it is God's intention, and man is secretly God. For humanity, it means a divine life here on earth, in a physical body. It's inevitable. For devotees with faith in Mother, it means elimination of all problems and the fulfillment of your highest aspirations in this lifetime, this year, even right now, in this moment, if you can intensely aspire without expectation and with infinite patience. For that, we need to know the process, and he reveals that process in Life Divine. In Chapter 2, The Materialist Denial, he tells us that in order to have a divine life on earth, we have to be able to reconcile the ultimate contradictions compared to which all the problems we have, all the obstacles we face, all the opposition, all the contradictions are nothing, they're child's play. For divine life on earth, they have come to overcome the obstacle, the contradiction between spirit and matter. The ultimate contradiction, because they're complete opposites, at least apparently. Matter is inert, inconscient, insensible. It's a mechanical energy. Spirit is intangible, invisible, pure, conscious existence without form. How is it possible for this formless, invisible, intangible spirit to manifest and live itself in the physical, inconscient forms on earth to make life divine? We can get a glimpse if you think about what's happened to India since 1947. A country that was completely impoverished, literacy only about 16%, life expectancy only about 35 years, poverty everywhere, a former colony subjected for hundreds of years to foreign rule. no roads, no schools, very few phones, almost no cars, very few hospitals, no food for millions of people, no confidence, no self-respect. Sri Aurobindo came to awaken India's aspiration for freedom. And Mother and Appa have been working to release the prosperity of India. 1965, year that Appa heard the states at Ramapuram, was the year of India's worst famine, worst droughts. It was also the year that the Green Revolution was launched in India, which has created widespread prosperity, abundant food self-sufficiency. India exports food today, created the thriving rural areas, the skyrocketing land prices. Land prices in that area have gone up 1,000 times. 1,000 times. Today, we see prosperity in the bustling cities of India. We see it in the rural areas in ever greater measure. And we see India talked about as the future, a future economic giant of the world. Something absolutely unimaginable just 60 years ago. Unimaginable. And yet it's a reality. It's a reality in the lifetimes of our people and of the youngsters who are going to see it actually, certainly see it made a reality. Where did all this prosperity come from? Where did it come from? It was hidden, secret all the time, waiting to awaken. It was there buried in the what looked to be the impoverished India. It was hidden. As prosperity was hidden in the poverty of India, life divine is hidden in the inconscient matter. We don't see it until it comes to the surface. Today, money is overflowing in the country. We gave some statistics in an earlier meeting about how much the bank deposits have gone up thousands of times. Gold has come up. Everything has come up. It has come out of hiding. It's there all the time. The life divine is already here. The supramental force is coming down to reveal it, to raise it up, and make it a reality. Your prosperity, the prosperity of every devotee. And Appa says, every devotee who aspires can get that 100 crores. He has no doubt about it. He says it's inevitable. Where is that 100 crores you're asking? It's concealed. It's concealed in the contradictions. It's buried in our attitudes. Mother's birthday is an opportunity to release that infinite force of prosperity that's buried within us. That is what her grace has come to bring. Sri Aurobindo tells us in this chapter that matter is only an appearance. It's a frontal appearance. It's the body of God. It's the frontal, finite appearance of the infinite. Matter is divine. Matter is the field of God's manifestation. It's the soul's temple. Matter is a concealed form of Satchidananda. We don't have to go to the highest heavens to find Satchidananda. The whole world is a concealed form of Satchidananda, and they have come to reveal it here, in life, on earth, in the body. God sleeps in matter, and nature is gradually awakening, and very slowly, through eons, Mother has come to hasten that awakening and make it now. He wants us to accept matter and life, not to run away from it, not to go to the Himalayas, not to aspire for moksha. He says we should face the facts of life, the conditions of life. They are real. They reveal hidden spiritual truths. Problems and contradictions in life conceal opportunities for our progress. We should discover those opportunities. We should make that progress. Life presents exactly the conditions we need, essential conditions to achieve and fulfill our highest aspirations. In chapter 2, Schopenhauer tells us that matter and spirit will be reconciled, are reconciled when we rise to the cosmic consciousness. And we'll discuss that, what it means. When we universalize our consciousness, we see that both matter and spirit and mind and life are all forms of energy, a divine energy, because all energy in its origin and essence is divine. By cosmic consciousness, it takes us out of the narrow bounds of the ego and makes us universal. And that's a key step to become a supermental being. For yogic life, our goal is to come out of the narrow bounds of the selfish There's again a feedback. Our aims should be spiritual opulence in life. It's possible for us to give generously of your achievements and feel happy when others outdo you, outshine you, then 100 crores is the minimum possibility for you. To Appa, it's a plain, obvious fact. Change your view and you will see it's true in your own life. Chapter 3 is the ascetic refusal. As we must accept matter, accept the material life and not try to run away from it, we must also accept the truths of spirit. Spirit is real. The real key to our success in life is to discover the spirit. Matter is not the ultimate reality. Matter and material life cannot bring us the fulfillment we seek. Material things provide the minimum. Elizabeth could never have been happy as Mrs. Collins. She seeks something higher. Do you? Darcy could never have been happy marrying a Carolyn. He found love in Elizabeth, who rejected his money, rejected his status, because she wanted something higher, a good man. Spirit is the ultimate reality. Spirit is infinite. Matter is finite, limited, dark, inconscient. How do we reconcile them? He says, spirit is the soul of matter. We have to discover the soul of matter. We have to discover matter is Satchitananda. We do that by bringing forth the psychic, by discovering our psychic, by going from the ego to the depths of our being. And Schopenhauer tells us that the individual is the key to this evolutionary process. The awakening of matter to its spiritual nature comes through us. We are the meeting point between the superconscious spirit and the subconscious matter. By going into ourselves and discovering our subliminal, the psychic in the subliminal, by opening to Mother's consciousness, so Mother can expand our consciousness, bringing the subconscious and the superconscious together, merging them in our consciousness, to make a supermental divine life. That is the role of human beings. That is the role of the individual. Mother's the supermental Shakti. the Divine Mother who descended into an individual human body to transform life on Earth. She remains here, present, near, in the subtle physical, working for that. Mother's consciousness descends into human life to transform it into yogic life. She brings out our psychic when we relate to her, when we have faith in her, when we surrender to her. Invoke Mother's presence in your life. Believe in infinite possibility. And it will happen. We do that. We relate to Mother. We bring out Mother's presence in our life when we have values of faith, sincerity, and surrender. Sri Aurobindo writes in the Mother, to walk through life armored against all fear, peril, disaster, only two things are needed. Only two things. Two that go always together. The grace of the Divine Mother, and on your side, an inner state made up of faith, sincerity, and surrender. Grace is here. Grace is assured. All you need in life for any goal, for any fulfillment, is faith, sincerity, and surrender. What's important is not what we say. What's important is not even what we do. What's important is what we are inside. Chapter 4 is the omnipresent reality. And here he tells us how this divine life is possible, because our conception, he gives us a conception of the divine. He makes us understand what the divine is in a new way. He calls it the absolute. The absolute is unknowable. It's beyond all description, ineffable, inexpressible. And because of that, humanity has come to believe that the absolute is something so different, so utterly different than what we are, that it has nothing to do with the world. But Sri Aurobindo tells us the world is part of the absolute. The world is made up of the absolute. The world lives in the absolute. The one is the absolute, the many is the absolute, both are real, both are, the universe is all, the individual, the universal, the transcendent that we call God, are really three aspects of one reality, which it means by the absolute. The finite is the appearance of the infinite. The infinite is not somewhere else. The infinite is here. The infinite is now. The infinite is us. The infinite is in us. It's in every moment. It's in every situation. Matter doesn't have to magically turn into something else. It is already something else. And when we change our view, we will discover matter is already divine. All is Brahman. Sri Aurobindo and Mother are one. Earthly life and divine life will be one. Divine life will reveal itself in earthly life. Mother is the infinite, the unknowable. All our conceptions of her are limited. All our definitions are limitations on her infinity. Can Mother do this? Can Mother do that? If I pray to this, can Mother do it? Even if I go to America or I go to Varanasi, can Mother help me there? Even in this situation where I lost my job, or I lost my bride, can Mother help even then? Even when I'm past 30? Even when the doctor tells me that I have a cancer? There are no limits on Mother. There are limits only. Can she give me 10 lakhs? Can she give me 1 crore? Maybe she can give me 10 lakhs, but how can she give me 1 crore? What are the limits we impose on mother? Mother is infinite. The only thing that's limited is our personalities and our faith, our sincerity, our surrender. Mother is the unknowable Brahman's power to manifest in the universe. She's already created a universe. She's created planet Earth. She's created everything that's there. Why do you doubt that she can create some prosperity in your life? She's already, and before your very eyes, raised India from subservient colony to a free nation and one of the great nations of the world, from utter poverty to abundant and expanding prosperity. Then why do you doubt that she can do the same in your life? She's the conscious force of Brahman that creates Satchidananda. She has four great powers and personalities. She's at once transcendent to the universe. She's the cosmic mother, universal. She's an individual being who can relate to you individually. She was here on Earth in a body, and she still has that form for those who have the subtle vision and the faith to see her. Mother can give not only peace or happiness or love or safety or protection, she can give material prosperity, psychological fulfillment, spiritual realization. It all depends on what you aspire for. Mother's consciousness is the meeting point between matter and spirit. What we call mother's consciousness is the force that's transforming matter, revealing Satchidananda in matter, revealing the divinity in life. That's what she's here for. She can reveal that divinity in your life as a yogic life. Her consciousness is the consciousness that builds the worlds. It's the consciousness that affects the evolution. She reconciles and transmutes. Hers is the active conscious force of Brahman working for the evolution. She is the supramental Shakti. She is the Brahman, the Maya, the Prakriti, the Shakti, the supramental force that Sri Aurobindo writes about in Life Divine. Life Divine is her biography. It's this mother, it's our mother, who is doing this work. Shakti, not karma, is the determining force in the universe. Not nature, but supernature. If we shift our reliance to her, she will show us that all life is her life, and she'll make it yogic life, and soon divine life. Sri Aurobindo is the first to reveal what the tradition missed, all traditions missed. It's not only that the world is evolving, spirit itself is evolving. Spirit is evolving in the universe. In the tradition, Ishvara disappears in the Prahalaya. Prahalaya. That is an over-mental Ishvara. But the Ishvara that Sri Aurobindo talks about is the supermental Ishvara. It never disappears. It's the creator of the universe. God is evolving from Purusha Prakriti to Ishvara Shakti. Prakriti evolves from matter to reveal life and mind. Shakti transforms nature to supernature, converting life to divine life. Transmutes and transforms matter to reveal Satchidananda in life. The choice before us is not the choice of do we want the material life or the spiritual life. The choice we should make is the yogic life. Sri Aurobindo says to fulfill God in life is our manhood, is humanity's destiny. Do not abandon the lower life. transfigure and divinize him. For devotees, it means, discover the spirit in life, discover mother in life. In chapter 5, he tells us the destiny of the individual. Never before has it been revealed what is the destiny of each of us. It's all right that the soul goes back to moksha, to heaven. It's all right, even the earth is evolving, but what about me? Will I be around? What happens to me? He tells us that the individual, the universal, and the transcendent are three forms of the divine being. We too are a form of the divine being. It's not that we have to discover God. He said, why do you want to worship God? Become God. Your truth of your being is God. God is trying to manifest in the world. And to do that, he wants to manifest in each of us. He wants to come out and reveal his infinity and his power and his knowledge in the lives of each one of us. And for that, we must move from the ego to the psychic. It is our psychic that can discover the divinity within us, can discover the divinity in the world around us, and the divinity, the transcendent Godhead above, and unify them. That is our mission. That is Mother's mission. He tells us the universe is Brahman. It is the infinite trying to manifest all of itself in space and time, in extension. And when it manifests, it will manifest as infinite prosperity, spiritual opulence for the whole world. There'll be no such thing as poverty, ignorance, suffering, death anywhere. But we also, the individuals, are that divine. Tradition says that our soul is only temporary. We go back to moksha and we disappear. He says we are real. Our soul is eternal. We are destined to be immortal. Death is only an interim passage for us until we discover our divinity and live immortally. Our destiny is not to just dissolve ourselves back in the oneness. Our destiny is to manifest the infinite in the terms of the finite. To manifest spirit, infinity, divinity in human life. Our soul wants to evolve into the psychic being. Psychic being becomes the supermental being. When Mother says the supermental being is coming on earth, what she means is our psychic beings are awakening and they will become supermental beings. In this chapter, he tells us about the relationship between the individual and the universal. That's always a cause of confusion for us. What is my relationship to the world around me? What do I have to do with what's happening around me and all those other people? Some of them may be friends, some of them are strangers. How do I relate to the world around me? All of us feel separate. We feel limited, cut off from other things. We live for ourselves and look at other people as if they're in a different world. Our basic problem is we're limited by the ego. We live in this narrow confines, this prison. We think we're limited to our body when we're as big as the whole world. We live only for ourselves and see others as different, separate, even against us. We compete with them. We fight with them. We quarrel with them. They are also ourselves. It's the spiritual truth. It's not just metaphysical philosophy. It's just not high morality. It's the truth. And when we discover that, when we act that way, we discover the truth of it. People who were against us become for us. People who were spoiling things for us, they end up helping things for us. People who were ignoring us or disliking us, everything changes when we change. Our goal and problem is not to make other people change. not to find out the people, the right people. It's to be right. It's to change ourselves, to change our view. Then everything will change. He tells us in this chapter, we have to universalize ourselves, the individual to universalize themselves and overcome this narrow confines of the ego. Chapter 6, Man and the Universe. Now he really tells us what's the meaning of our life. What's the meaning of the universe? He says in the very opening sentence, the progressive revelation of a great transcendent and luminous reality is the meaning of the universe. That's what this world is. It's progressive because it's incomplete. It's on the way. It started as pure matter, then it gave rise to life, then it gave rise to human life, and next it's going to give rise to divine life. It's a progressive revelation. The whole world is a revelation of the divine. And we are the field for that. We are the instruments for that. This is not a meaningless, life is not meaningless. The world is not an illusion. Nothing happens by chance. We are not helpless spectators in a meaningless world. The world has a purpose. We are the key actors in the story. We're the heroes and heroines of that story. The truth is that Satchitananda is manifesting itself in the world. When Appa talks about abundant prosperity, abundant accomplishment, spiritual opulence, he's asking us to discover a little bit, a tiny little bit, a very little bit of the hidden Satchitananda that Mother wants to bring into our lives, that she can bring in at any moment when we change our view. And he tells us, what will we be as an individual when we become conscious? When we get out of the ego and discover our psychic, when we really discover why we're here as souls in the earth, the world, he says the destiny of the individual is to be an existence wholly self-aware, entirely master of itself, realizing itself in form, unfolding itself in the individual. The divine existence is unfolding itself not in the higher heavens, not in the skies, not just in the world around us, inside each of us. That is our destiny. The universal and the individual are two essential appearances in which this unknowable is descending into life and revealing itself, unfolding itself. God having entirely universal and the individual are two essential appearances in which the unknowable descends. God having entirely become nature, nature seeks to be progressively God. Nature means us, human beings. Mother is not merely above, she's here in life. For the devotee, Mother becomes life. She becomes the force and energy and governing force of our life. She presides over our life. What is the real purpose of the individual? Our purpose is to transcend ourselves. Not like Mrs. Bennett to prove that we're better than our neighbors. Not like Carolyn to spoil things for other people. Or not like Wickham to do whatever he wants at the moment, even if it hurts everybody. To transcend ourselves, because by doing that, we become ourselves. We become our true selves. We become ourselves by knowing ourselves. We know ourselves by becoming ourselves. We have to discover who we really are, and who we really are is not the separate ego. Then what is life? The individual and the universe are necessary for each other. We need the world around us. We cannot exist without it. Not only we need it for our food, for our knowledge, for our work, for our education, for our entertainment, we need it for our growth, for our self-discovery. Because the individual and the world are two aspects of a single reality. We think we're separate. We're not separate. We need each other completely. And the universe comes to us through life. Whatever comes to us through life, whether it's the sounds of noise next door, or a car that doesn't drive properly, or a neighbor that's asking a favor, or a phone call that interrupts us, or a letter, or whatever the problems, whatever the opportunities, what comes to us from life is what we need for our progress. Mother wants to bring us the infinite in life in order to make our lives infinite. We have to open ourselves, be receptive to receive what life wants to bring, to aspire for what Mother offers to give us. The divine comes to us in life as values. When somebody comes and behaves generously to us, it comes, we are happy to receive a gift. We must know that the divine is trying to awaken generosity in us. When somebody comes and makes a demand on us, or is mean, or is jealous, we must know that Mother wants us to overcome jealousy in ourselves, not the jealousy of another person. Whatever values come from life to us, from the universe to us, come in order to awaken higher values in us. And we will find invariably that when we become entirely truthful, entirely good, entirely harmonious, those same values come to us from life around. Our life will become Mother's life, yogic life. When we discover the inner divinity, life will become divine for us. What's the situation for us now? We look at the spirit above. We don't see anything except those with a spiritual vision. It looks like some unknowable above. We can't see anything. We can only have faith that it exists. When we look down at life, we see everything's mechanical. Things happen by chance. We know there's death. We know there's suffering. We feel limitations. Either above or below, it doesn't look divine to us. How do we reconcile these opposites? How do we make this life immortal, full of freedom from limitation, unmixed bliss? That's the formula he gives in Life Divine. And he says, what if there really aren't opposites? What if matter and spirit really aren't contradictions? What if death and life are really not opposites? What if bliss and pain are not really opposites? He says, good, truth, delight, and their opposites, death, limitation, and suffering, are both forms of Satchidananda. The lower forms he calls shadow forms. They're shadows created by a distortion in our consciousness. Why does he call them shadows? It's like the shadow. When we see there's a shadow from the sunlight, the shadow is not a real thing. It's not like we have light on one hand and shadow on the other. The shadow is only the absence of light. There is only light, and there's the distortion or the limitation of light which creates a shadow. Like that in the world, there is only Ananda, there is only bliss. But the shadow which we call pain, the shadow which we call death, comes because of our distorting consciousness, which is this consciousness of the ego. And those shadows don't come to us as a punishment to tell us that we're bad. They come to us as the conditions, essential conditions for our achievement. Like Wickham came to Darcy, constantly harassing him, speaking falsehood, doing mean things, interfering with Darcy, spreading scandalous rumor. Wickham is not the devil come to plague Darcy. Wickham comes to help Darcy give up his own falsehood, his own ignorance, his own egoism, his own pride and arrogance, so he can discover love and make his life divine. And now we come to the last of the chapters I want to discuss today, chapter 7, Ego and Duality. The first 7 chapters really constitute an introduction to the book, actually 8 chapters, and then he starts and goes into the details of the process. But these 7 chapters really give us the essence of his vision of the book. And in this chapter, Ego and the Duality, he tells us the key. He's already mentioned many times, but he explains in detail the secret. How do we convert human life into divine life? How do we convert ordinary life, ordinary social life, into yogic life? And again, he reminds us the dualities of falsehood, suffering, evil, ill will, all the negatives that we don't like in our life are the result of a false view. Our problem is not with the people around us, our problem is not with our circumstances, our problem is not that nobody gives us a chance, our problem is we need to change our view. We are out of harmony with the universal around us. We need to establish that harmony. He tells us how. In the first paragraph, he tells us in this chapter the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. When Eve gives Adam the apple and he eats of the apple, and there all the trouble begins. The trouble begins because Adam acquires an ego. He begins to think of himself as separate from everybody else. And there the dualities are born. And Sri Aurobindo says, there's an answer, there's a solution for us, there's redemption for humanity, even for Adam. He says redemption comes by the recovery of the universal in the individual and the spiritual term in the physical. It's a difficult sentence. What he means is we will be redeemed when we stop thinking ourselves as a separate ego and we universalize, which is we must discover our psychic. Our psychic knows that all souls are one with us, feels all are one with us. That's the first half of the sentence. When we come out of the ego and become the psychic, the dualities will be reconciled, they'll be harmonized. Our difficulties will be opportunities. All our suffering will become a source of delight. But for the divine life, that's not enough. The highest spiritual principle, Satchitananda, must come down to into our physical bodies. The supramental force must transform our physical bodies and make us the supramental being. Then, not only pain will disappear, even death will disappear. We will be physically immortal. This is the message of Life Divine. The process he describes in life divine. He asks us to move from the ego to the psychic. And once we discover the psychic, call down the supramental force, which is Mother, to transform our earthly nature. That's for transformation and divine life. What about for yogic life? We may not all discover our psychic in this lifetime. We may not all be able to call down the supramental, but we can all move towards Mother, have faith in Mother, overcome the disharmonies in ourselves, expand our lives, overcome the problems that the ego creates in order to create spiritual opulence and abundant accomplishment. And that's what Mother means by the sunlit path. As devotees in life with faith in Mother, we may not aspire for the highest supramental realization, but we can all aspire for the sunlit path. If you always smile at life, life will always smile at you. Sounds so simple. Our problem is, we smile at people who smile at us. We smile when good things happen, and we're angry when people don't do what we want and we don't get what we want. That's not what she said. Whatever happens, whatever comes to you, if you can smile, if you can have faith in her, if you can know that the best possible is coming for you and it's an opportunity, your difficulty is really an opportunity. If you can maintain your faith in her, if you can be grateful for all you've received, then your life will become the sunlit. You'll walk on the sunlit path. How do we do that? We have to overcome the ego. And in all of Appa's writings, in many of the talks, explaining how to overcome the ego, don't react. Don't take initiative. Be equal. Be harmonious. Don't assert. Think of other people. Expand yourself. Identify with others. Be happy for their happiness. Take responsibility for what happens around you instead of saying, that's not my business, it's not my fault, I am not responsible. Mother says, this was her New Year's message in 1973, when you become conscious of the whole world at the same time, then you can become conscious of the divine. That's really universalizing your consciousness. Okay, if you can't become conscious of the whole world, at least you can become conscious of all the people around you. Take their points of view. Think of their happiness. Work for their happiness. Take responsibility for their problems. Think always of Mother, whose consciousness is universal. And she said on her own birthday, just less than 2 months later, the more we advance on the way, the more the need of the divine presence becomes imperative and indispensable. Why? Because the more we advance on the way, the more we realize everything comes from Mother, except our problems. Our problems come from the ego. All the solutions come from Mother. And the only solution we need is to move from ourselves and our ego to Mother. And the more we live in Mother, the more indispensable we feel it is. To live in her, to surrender to her, to say, thy will be done, not my will. How do we transcend ourselves? We universalize ourselves by including everybody else. We transcend ourselves by really seeking the truth. Because Brahman is the absolute truth. Reality is the truth. The transcendent truth, goodness, love is the reality we want in our life. There's no compromise. We have to reach for it. We have to cling to truth. Mother is Maheshwari, the goddess of truth, and Mahakali, the power of truth. And Mother, in her writings and messages, constantly speaks of the truth. She says, let the light of truth be born upon the world, on earth today. Truth is in us. We have only to become aware of it. Take truth for your force. Take truth for your refuge. Salute to the advent of truth. The best way to hasten the manifestation of the divine, collaborate. Love is to collaborate with the triumph of truth. Truth alone can give to the world the power of receiving and manifesting the divine love. What we need is the truth. Cling to it. The divine life that they are working to bring here is a life of delight. And Mother's personality, the key note of Mother's personality is an infinite sweetness. That is the vibration most apparent on her birthday. Mother's consciousness is sweetness. Her look, her smile, the line from Savitri, awoke celestial scent. Even in earth stuff and their intense delight, pour a supernal beauty on men's lives. Mother is not only sweetness, Mother is divine love, Mahalakshmi. A deep of compassion, a hushed sanctuary, her inward help unbarred a gate in heaven. Love in her was wider than the universe. The whole world could take refuge in her single heart. All of us can take refuge in her heart. She's calling to us. She's open to us for that. And when we say Mother is love, what we really mean by that is something unimaginable. She describes, on April 13, 1962, her experience of becoming the supreme love of the universe. This is from her agenda. This is her experience. She's describing her experience. The supreme love was manifesting through big pulsations, and each pulsation was bringing the world further in its manifestation. It was stupendous. It was the formidable pulsations of the eternal, stupendous love, only love. Each pulsation of the love was carrying the universe further in its manifestation. Only love and love and love and love. Immense, formidable, stupendous, carrying everything. I, Mother, was at the origin. I was the origin. The origin of the universe. The origin of the manifestation. She was and is that stupendous force of supreme love that wants to convert all life into divine life. It was stupendous. Mother is here, not far off or aloof. She's the individual embodiment of the transcendent and universal divine mother, the one divine force which acts in the universe and in the individual and beyond the universe. Prakriti is the cosmic power that maintains the cosmos, the law of the cosmos. It's a delegate of Mother, but Mother is the transcendent power above and within the universe that wants to reveal itself and divinize. She's the transcendent grace. She's come to bring down the supermental and its descent, and her descent is what makes the supermental manifestation possible. It's already started. It's already happening. Spiritual opulence and abundant accomplishment in our life is to express Mother's consciousness and the supermental force for the human evolution. Mother is an institution. Her consciousness is organized. She can deliver results of any kind. She can deliver them any place. Mother is like an ATM card that you go and you put in the machine and you get out money from your account. Only thing is, this is an ATM card to the Reserve Bank of India. You can take out as much as you want. The only thing is, you need to know the PIN code. The PIN number is Mother's name. The mantra is to have faith in her. Knowing Mother, it's the difference between having a computer and being connected to the internet. As a computer, you can do things yourself. When you're on the internet, you're connected to the whole universe. That's what Appa means when he says, Mother is a spiritual institution. Her consciousness is an institution. Mother is the goal. Aspiration is the force that delivers everything to us through her grace. But what you should really aspire for is not anything, it's her. Because achieving her, all is achieved. Calling Mother is the only mantra. Wanting Mother is the only aspiration we need. Finding her, all is found. Achieving her, all is achieved. Giving yourself to her, all is given to you. And the means for that, we all know it so well. Appa writes it in every paragraph, on every page, in every book. It's consecration. And Mother said on her birthday in 1971, a life consecrated to union with the divine is the only life worth living. And she also said, there's no greater joy than a consecrated living. Whether our aspiration is for divine life, yogic life, spiritual opulence, or abundant accomplishment, the process is the same. The power is the same. Whatever your question is, the answer is the same. Have faith in Mother. Call her, depend on her, give yourself to her. Be as she would want you to be, and all will be given to you. Wish you all a very wonderful Mother's birthday.